What does it mean to be called crazy in a crazy world? Listen to Madness Radio, Voices and Visions from Outside Mental Health, sponsored by peer-run support communities Freedom Center, the Icarus Project, and Portland Hearing Voices. Madness Radio can be heard on FM stations on the Pacifica Radio Network and is online at kboo.fm/madnessradio. Welcome to Madness Radio. This is your host, Will Hall. On this show, we're going to be discussing the indigenous healing art of traditional Chinese medicine and some uses in modern mental health. Many years ago, the Freedom Center, which is a support community for people diagnosed with severe mental illnesses that I helped found, we offered a very successful free community acupuncture clinic. And this free clinic focused on psychiatric medication withdrawal. There's a lot of information about the clinic on the Freedom Center website, which is freedom-center.org, and also a show with Mike Smith on Madness Radio. And so this fall, I was invited to help train health promoters working with indigenous groups in Mexico in how to use the ear acupuncture protocol NADA in their communities. And NADA is the protocol that we used at the Freedom Center clinic. And I learned this approach through a certification program at the Lincoln Hospital in the South Bronx many years ago. The training in Mexico was held in a small town in the Sierra Tarahumara area of Chihuahua, a remote mountainous region. We were invited by the local churches and community organizations to train people as a response to the effects of violence, war, and trauma in the region. So I had a chance to interview some of the students and teachers involved with the training. Herman Garcia is the Vice President of Crossroads Community Supported Healthcare and is Professor of Education Emeritus from the College of Education at New Mexico State University, Las Cruces. Welcome to Madness Radio, Herman Garcia.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Tell us a little bit about where we are and what it is that we're doing.
Right now we're up in the vast part of the Chihuahuan state called the Sierra Tarahumara. And it's a huge, huge indigenous community that's spread out over several thousand square miles. And it's a location up in the mountains, very secluded, and many communities that need a lot of service here, a lot of economic development and agricultural development and those kinds of things.
And what is your role? What brought you here?
Initially, I was here from 2002 till about 2007. As a teacher trainer, we were doing language rescue for the communities because there's a lot of language and cultural loss among the Tarahumaras. In fact, Rarámuri is their real name, and they speak Rarámuri. Tarahumara is the conquered term for them. They have a lot of language loss, a lot of cultural loss. They have huge exodus from the Sierra into city centers. And there's a lot of suffrage in those city centers because they're not accepted, they can't adjust, and it's a real struggle. There's high rates of alcoholism and drug use and abuse and just very difficult situations for them as they have left the Sierra because of primarily economic situations up here.
And so some of the schools in the area teach the indigenous languages, but mostly they're teaching Spanish, so people are in the process of losing their language and their cultural heritage.
That's correct. There's a huge push to get everybody to speak Spanish as early as possible, very similar to what's happened in the United States with language minority populations there, where they spoke their native languages, the biggest one being Spanish, but there was other communities. And that has been going on for a long time. It's the Americanization process, which here it's the nationalization, Mexicanization of populations, indigenous populations.
So this is really a legacy of colonialism that continues today.
Yeah, very, very, very much so. It's a colonial community, and you can see it in the way, on a daily basis, in the way that the relationships happen, and you know, as you see people interact with each other, who's in control and who's not, you know, who's has the soft voice, the privileged voice.
Yeah, you really see traveling in Mexico, the darker your skin is, the lower down you are in the hierarchy.
Absolutely, yeah. Mexico has bought into very much the Europeanness of statuses, you know, that's the status to have. Is if you look at the television models, the television newscasters, everybody there, you have a very European disposition of and characterization of the media. And also, you do have several mestizos that have been very successful, but they are very much in support of the system that exists for colonization. So they haven't, you know, there's very little struggle or not an open struggle anyway for maintaining native communities and native languages in Mexico. Mexico has, in the vicinity, I'm going to say, of about 70 major indigenous groups, and there's probably other smaller ones.
And so when you say the rescue of the languages, tell us about how you helped make that happen and what is the struggle around there to rescue the languages from this colonization process?
You have a lot of people that speak Spanish, but they don't have a culture to support that Spanish, you know. There's a whole culture that supports the language, that's what we were trying to do at the time. Unfortunately, what happened was the violence in Mexico increased to the point where they themselves asked us not to come back because the violence was coming into these Sierra communities, into these indigenous communities where the various cartels were hiding out and taking position. And so it became very unfortunate for the communities because there was a lot of violence. There was a lot of violence against the indigenous communities who didn't want to participate in supporting the cartels from the government. And that was another form of major forced colonization.
Help us understand a little bit about the politics of that and what's the role of the government in this, what's the role in the U.S., because we hear a lot about the violence in Mexico and drug cartels, but people don't really understand why or what the solution is or what's going on there and maybe how it is connected with colonialism.
The unfortunate thing that we were in one of the communities the other day, and one of the things that happened was you saw a lot of military. They had military posts. They were checking. They were walking to the buses that we were riding and, you know, check the bags and those kinds of things. But there's a lot of militarization. But I also spoke to people afterwards who said that that's just kind of a front because come November, the cold sets in. But that's also the time that they start transferring their marijuana, cultivation of the marijuana, huge up here.
Well, they start the harvest.
The harvest of marijuana. And what happens is the military leaves and then the military moves away and then they start moving that marijuana out. But even the government knows that, even the U.S. government knows that, but it's an economy for Mexico and that Mexico needs. And so they turn the other way for those months that they're moving the harvest out and selling it to the U.S., of course, you know. So it's a never-ending thing. It'll, you know, you're going to have a very different approach and a very different policy by governments to ever try to reduce that movement because it is a big part of the economy here.
Yes, we should remember that this is not really a Mexico problem. It's really a U.S. problem because the market for the drugs is the United States. The money that creates the incentive for the whole industry is from the United States. And all the guns that are used in the violence are manufactured and originate from the United States. And the policy that makes all this possible, the drug war, the prohibition that drives everything underground and makes it so difficult to control is a policy that comes from the United States. So you mentioned the alcoholism and the problems with poverty when the indigenous people are forced by economics to go into the cities. What's the connection with mental health and the rescue of the languages? Why is that important for the mental health of these communities?
Well, it's extremely important because when you're able to rely on your own language and your own culture, there's nothing wrong with learning a second language. In fact, it's encouraged in many parts of the world. But when you learn a new language and forget the first language, you also lose a part of your identity and a part of your soul and who you are as a person. And it's very important to maintain those native languages. It's as if they asked us as Americans that now we were going to be forced to learn you know, a European language, let's say German or other language, Italian, and we were never be allowed to speak our English in the schools, we would be traumatized as a society by it. And that's what's happened here, you know. When you lose a language, you lose a whole vision of the world. You see so many people in the world today who have lost their native language, and they know their whatever ethnicity or race they are, but they don't identify with it because they don't connect with it through language and culture. There's nothing wrong with learning a second language. It's very powerful. But it's when you lose the languages in place of another language that it becomes detrimental and not good.
And tell us about why we're here now and what it is that we're doing with the Nada acupuncture and why that's important to supporting the mental health of these communities.
One of the things that we had planned was to work in Juarez, because, of course, we know that Juarez was one of the major cities in the world where there was a lot of violence, a lot of deaths every day, up to, you know, several thousand lives a year during that period of extreme violence. So many lives lost. So Juarez was a place we wanted to come to and start this Nada project so that people could find relief. And then from there, people started saying, well, there's a lot of violence in the Sierra, you know, with the Tarahumaras. Nada is a process. It's a procedure where you apply needles to the ears. And it's an organization that was started many, many years ago in New York, reducing the use of heroin and other drugs, cocaine and many other alcohol. And people found over time that it was very helpful for stress and violence as well. And in fact, as I was telling you earlier, in New York, after 9/11, it was applied to the police and the fire departments, and they loved it because it was helping them survive, you know, what they had seen and what they had experienced.
How does it connect with the indigenous culture here? Because acupuncture is Chinese medicine, so how does it relate to bringing it into an indigenous culture in rural Mexico?
So we had today and today's here up in the Sierra, we had a church service, and then the priest asked the local people, both Mestizo and Rarámuri people, to stay and receive the initials part of acupuncture, the basic component of the program. And we were surprised that, we had quite a few people, and they stayed and they received the treatment. And I saw it as a very successful. Yeah, it's not a cure-all, but it's a process and an experience that people have found to help them relax, chill out in a sense. And stop drinking, stop taking drugs, or reduce anyway those experiences of self-medicating. Well, the communities out here have forever depended on the earth to find their medicine, and they have these centers, as we saw yesterday, all of these plants that have been turned into healing plants, potions, so to speak, and that's been going on for thousands of years. Nada is something that fits very properly into this kind of more natural approach to medicine.
So we've been spending several days together. I'm just getting to know you. And you said that you actually traveled to Brazil and met Paulo Freire. Tell us about him and people who don't maybe know what his philosophy is about, and tell us about meeting him.
Yeah, well, that was a treat of the treat of my life. I had read Paulo Freire as a freshman in college 100 years ago.
And who is Paulo Freire for people who don't know who he is or what his theories are?
Paulo Freire was a renowned educator, and then became involved in the work of the campesinos in Brazil. He's a world renowned educator, but one of the principal things that he introduced was the notion of conscientización, of movement to conscientize the person about the work that they do and about the communities in which they live. and the ways we engage people as people. And he said, you know, we can't work with campesinos or should not work with campesinos the way the traditional schools do, where they have a banking system of education where everybody gets the same amount, the same treatment of ideas, etc. He said it has to be individualized and has to have a critical aspect to it, and it has to have a transformative component to it to get people to understand. And that's where the notion of transformation, conscientización, has a transformative effect on the person that the educational process that Paulo Freire was promoting.
How does that affect mental health, do you think?
No, it has a major effect on mental health, because once you conscientize a person, once you enter that component of or that plane or realm of conscientization, there's no going back. You can't go back.
Germán García, thank you so much for joining us on Madness Radio.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
Gloria is a volunteer health promoter who works with the Rarami indigenous groups in Mexico. She attended the Nada ear acupuncture training in August.
Bueno, yo soy de la comunidad de Rojas Árabe.
So I am from the community of Rojas Árabe.
Con esto, lo que estuvimos aprendiendo en estos días, se me hizo muy importante para seguir ayudando a nuestros hermanos y hermanas.
So I think it's very important, everything that I learned in these just past few days. I thought it was very interesting and very important way to continue helping my brothers and sisters. I think it's going to be really helpful in a lot of the cases where people have a lot of stress. But I would also like to continue to learn so I can continue to help. I'm very grateful for the opportunity. I'm very proud of myself, of having learned this new technique, of having come from far away to learn it.
What do you think of someone who would say, but you are not a doctor, you can't do this, you're not a doctor?
¿Qué pensarías tú de alguien que te diga, pero si tú no eres doctora?
Que a mí me enseñaron primero que yo practiqué para poder aplicar la terapia.
Well, I would respond that, you know, I took this training. I was taught on how to do this. I practiced, and I learned how to do this protocol.
Great. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Muchas gracias por acompañarnos hoy, Gloria.
Gracias a ustedes.
María de Jesús is a barefoot health promoter and NADA practitioner in Ciudad Juárez, Mexico, where she has worked with women's self-help groups within the Catholic churches for many years.
Este protocolo es muy importante, ayuda mucho al sistema nervioso, ¿verdad? Y este ayuda para la depresión, para el estrés, el insomnio.
Particularly, it helps with the nervous system, so it's very helpful for to reduce depression, anxiety.
Para todo el sistema emocional, ¿verdad? Ayuda a las emociones.
Okay. It can also help with all of our emotions. So NADA started in Ciudad Juárez in 2011. It was particularly helpful because in Juárez we've suffered a lot of violence. And as a society, we developed a psychosis, which the treatments of NADA became very helpful for.
And what kinds of problems were they, and how did the treatment help?
Pues hubo personas que perdieron sus familiares.
There were people who lost family members to the violence. They suffered a lot, so started to experience depression. They started to experience depression because of the pain that they experienced, a pain that they were not able to release and stayed within them. So besides depression from losing a family member to violence, there was also the, you know, the effects or the trauma of seeing murders on the streets or people who have been murdered on the street. For all those situations, people started to develop panic attacks. Sí. And because of all those situations, people had very little sleep or no sleep at all. Not sleeping made depression worse, anxiety worse, sadness worse.
Y hay bastantes testimonios de personas que han recibido este protocolo en Ciudad Juárez.
And we have numerous testimonies of people who have received the NADA protocol in Ciudad Juárez and who have benefited from it. Yes, we have to take the NADA protocol to more people in our communities because it's a natural alternative and it's a very positive, it has a very positive impact.
Bueno, muchas gracias por hablar con nosotros.
Pues gracias a ustedes por invitarme.
Thank you for inviting me.
Sister Maria del Rosario is the coordinator of the Barefoot Health Promotion and NADA Training School in the Catholic Diocese of Ciudad Juárez, Mexico.
Bueno, estos talleres surgieron en un momento en que se estaba viviendo más fuertemente la violencia en Ciudad Juárez.
So these trainings started in 2011, right at the time when there was still a lot of violence in Juárez that we were dealing with, and lots of kidnappings, lots of killings, had a big impact on our community.
A nuestros consultorios, por ejemplo, llega gente con mucho estrés.
So a lot of stress is caused by the ongoing issues of violence. Even this past year, there's been in new parts of the area, there's been a lot more violence that has been kind of surging in Juárez. And all of this, you know, has a tremendous impact on stress.
De que muchas personas que quedaron con muchos traumas han podido salir, ¿verdad? Han podido salir de su situación.
So a lot of the people have been able to overcome the issues of trauma and depression that they had been suffering from because of this therapy. One of the families that came to our church looking for the acupuncture, her husband had been blamed for a murder. He was incarcerated and sent to Mexico City and imprisoned there for the accusation of him murdering these people.
Lo torturaron mucho, haciéndolo hacer que él se culpara.
So the federal police tortured him and really harmed him during this incarceration. The federal police brought him to Mexico City to be processed, and they tortured him, and they tried to make him admit that he committed the murder. And after 2 years of this, the federal police finally came back to him and said, sorry, we thought you were a different person. You're not responsible for this murder.
Él vuelve a su familia y estando con su familia, él siente muchos ataques de terror.
So when he came back, he's having a lot of panic attacks. And so that's how he sought our help with for his own panic attacks, that lots of nightmares. So he was able to calm down and stabilize, and he was able to come to some peace within himself. So the health promoters that help us, they're all volunteers.
Los únicos que se les da una mínima apoyo es a la psicóloga, una cantidad de 100 pesos por consulta.
So the only one that charges a psychologist for 100 pesos, which is about $6. $6 per consult. So on Saturdays, they offer massage from the morning to the afternoon. And they charge 50 pesos per massage, about $3 for a massage. But most of the services we offer are just pure, done by volunteers. We don't charge. We just collect donations. And so the people coming in, some people can't pay anything, others pay more. And that's how we're able to afford everything.
So we just finished a training workshop for this indigenous community in the Sierra. How do you think the training workshop went?
Se me hizo muy, muy valioso.
So yeah, she thinks it's been very valuable. And the both the mestizos that they have come to the training, as well as the indigenous health workers that came to the training, they're very excited to continue to do this work.
Creo que les va a ayudar bastante, y porque también aquí se ha vivido muy fuertemente la violencia.
Well, there's a lot of effects of the violence that the people have suffered from here. In both the mestizo community here and the indigenous communities, you know, they've been very affected by the violence, but they've also been forgotten by their government. These communities, they're, you know, way up in the Sierra Tarahumara, the Rarami community especially, you know, there's not a lot of help that comes that they have access to.
Also, tell us a little bit about the use of traditional medicine in these communities.
Explícanos sobre el uso de medicina tradicional en esas comunidades.
Desde muchas generaciones antes venían trabajando y utilizando las hierbas, la medicina tradicional, ¿verdad?
So for many generations, the communities here have been using local herbs, medicinal herbs, to make medicine out of. People are very tired of drugs and other types of medicine that they've been only had access to. So people are very open to these types of therapies.
Okay, gracias.
In this border city battered by violence, the people of this parish have been dealt one of the harshest blows. Each of the paper doves on this cross represents someone from the neighborhood who was murdered.
Y de hecho nos faltan muchos todavía.
And there are more paper doves that will be put on, says this nun. After Mass, she and others try to help survivors cope. They're volunteers trained by an international acupuncture organization. This mother of three says she arrives tense and leaves tranquil. Since her uncle was killed, she's had trouble sleeping and eating and suffered debilitating panic attacks.
This model has been implemented in various places around the world, refugee camps on the Thai-Burma border, in Uganda for Kenyan refugees, in the Gaza Strip.
This American acupuncturist from nearby Las Cruces is part of the team that trained the Mexican volunteers. About 20 parishes in Juarez are offering the acupuncture therapy, and the number of people participating at this church and others continues to grow. Some are here for the first time. Others are now regulars. They're all seeking relief from the stress, fear, and trauma that comes from living in a region ravaged by violence. In a neighborhood struggling to recover after years of bloodshed.
So welcome to Madness Radio, Ryan Bemis.
Thea, thanks for having me.
So Ryan, tell us, what are we doing here? You run a community acupuncture clinic in Las Cruces, New Mexico, and now you're also doing training work in Juarez, Mexico, and the Sierra Mountains in northern Mexico.
Yeah, we actually started training people in ear acupuncture in the NADA protocol, which is a community-based treatment, in 2011, before our clinic started up in Las Cruces.
So when you say community acupuncture in the NADA protocol, what do you mean by that?
Well, community acupuncture is doing full-body acupuncture in a group setting, focusing on distal points, hands, legs, head, and ears.
What's the advantage of doing a community acupuncture setting like that in a group?
Well, a lot of people feel safer in a group. A lot of people find a lot of benefits getting treated around other people. We're able to make it very affordable for people also. We charge just about $20 for a treatment.
So doing group treatments is cheaper, less expensive way of doing it in terms of the number of acupuncturists you need to hire to have it to do a treatment.
Yeah, I mean, group community acupuncture is, you know, is one got to be one of the fastest growing movements of acupuncture in the United States. But community acupuncture really comes from NADA ear acupuncture, or the acu-detox movement, which was started in the 1970s in response to the heroin epidemic in South Bronx at Lincoln Hospital. So they use ear acupuncture in a group setting, treating a lot of people at once. And in the NADA-style clinics, it's just using ear points. Often the clinics are just free. They're walk-in, you don't have an appointment, and you can just come in and get a treatment anytime they're open.
And this really originated with the idea of barefoot doctors in China, that they would train people from the community with basic skills that they could provide access to remote areas and really vital healthcare needs that different communities had.
Yeah, the barefoot doctor movement dates back to the 1950s in China, in rural areas of China, where they trained health workers in basic acupuncture protocols. The NADA movement started in the U.S. Through the Western psychiatric and addictions treatment community and community activists in the South Bronx. So
it was really the communities that asked for this. It really came from them.
Yeah, the whole NADA movement started out of community activists demanding treatments that were not drugs and other alternatives to drug treatments. People who started NADA were Black Panthers and Young Lords activists, and they were really interested in providing drug-free treatments.
So this really comes out of the social activism of the 70s, and I think a lot of the activists at that time really felt that the drug epidemic was in a lot of ways coming from the government, and there was a kind of an industry of drug treatment, and they wanted to get outside of that completely and just base the care in the communities and have the response to the drug problem be community response instead of police response, instead of big hospitals and big industrial medicine response.
Yeah, in the 1970s, a big problem at that time in treating heroin addiction is that methadone was one of the only options they had. So these activists, were interested in self-help recovery, in grassroots-based care, in community-based care, and they're very interested in acupuncture too, and that's how they developed this protocol.
So methadone was considered a helpful treatment for drug addiction, but like many psychiatric treatments, it was actually as bad, if not worse, than the problem it was treating in some ways. And so they tried to create some kind of alternatives, and they looked to acupuncture.
Yeah, methadone is extremely hard to get off of. It's also a much more dangerous drug as far as overdoses. More people overdose from methadone than they do from heroin. A lot of people don't know that. So, and methadone treatment, while it can help a lot of people, it can also harm people too.
So then the community really took things in their own hands, and they started to develop their own approach to acupuncture that was based on really a peer support model. Is that right?
Yeah, the Lincoln model out of the South Bronx was that has kind of become known as the NADA model, was developed to, train peer health workers within communities so they can provide the treatment on their own.
So it's a little bit like AA in the sense that people who've been through the experience then turn around and become counselors. But in this context, it's people who've maybe had some experience with overcoming drug use, then go on to train in community acupuncture, then provide it to other people who are in recovery.
Yeah, the first people that developed the NADA protocol were recovering drug addicts.
And then since then, so it started in one hospital in the Bronx, and then since then it started to spread. And basically that was because it was very effective, and there started to be some research studies that showed that it was effective, and now it's NADA ear acupuncture protocol is used in many, many sites, not only in the United States, but all over the world. Is that right?
Yeah, Lincoln became not only a treatment center, a grassroots-based treatment center, but they were able to train people from all over the world in this protocol that could be used in lots of different settings. Now, it started out just in addictions treatment, but it's been used in trauma-based recovery, used as part of cancer care. It can be an excellent therapy even for pain issues.
And where are some of the settings that it's being used in?
Throughout Europe, there's a lot of hospitals that is well integrated into the programs. Lots of nurses, hundreds of nurses in some hospital systems have been trained in NADA. It's also been integrated within the jails, prisons, drug court programs. They train first responders in the NADA protocol to be able to provide the NADA protocol as part of disaster relief.
So it started with drug treatment and addiction recovery, but then they realized it was also really helpful for trauma and anxiety and all kinds of different mental health issues.
Just at first, it was just an addictions treatment, but it's been shown that basically anybody can benefit from the NADA protocol. It's very relaxing to receive the treatment. It's definitely not a cure for every condition across the board. It's not going to be a cure for addictions, not going to be a cure for mental health issues. It's not going to take away stress in your life forever, but it can be a very helpful component as part of any type of recovery. And really anybody who's struggling with a health issue can benefit from the NADA protocol.
Tell Tell us about some of the research studies that have shown some real specific efficacy outcomes for the NADA acupuncture protocol.
Well, some of the best research done on the NADA protocol is that it shows that it improves a client's engagement in a program. So it keeps them engaged in program. It reduced costs for systems, for health systems. There's been some research that shows that the NADA protocol helps reduce recidivism rates in a community. So people that get the NADA protocol are less likely to be readmitted into a hospital for a crisis situation. They're less likely to be readmitted into a jail. They're less likely to get incarcerated again. And also they're all less likely to leave against medical advice from a program. So all those things come at a high cost to the taxpayer.
And are there other examples of research that supports the use of acupuncture to treat people?
So CSAT and SAMHSA has a best practice manual on addictions treatment that recognizes the NADA protocol and acupuncture. The Department of Veterans Affairs and the Department of Defense also recognizes the use of acupuncture in their evidence-based best practice manual for PTSD.
So just give us a sense of what does it look like if you were to watch the protocol being used and treated with people, what would it actually look like happening for someone who's never seen it before and never knows what we're discussing?
Well, these NADA ear acupuncture groups, it's basically it can be set up anywhere. It can be inside, it can be outside, anywhere where you have somebody, where any place where somebody can sit. It can be on the ground, it can be on a bench, it can be on a chair. In WADAs, they treat a lot of people just in church pews because that's just where they have places for people to sit. The church, the priests announce after Mass that, hey, whoever wants to get some ear acupuncture, stay afterwards. People just sit on the benches, and the health promoters in the church that know how to do the NADA protocol just treat everybody right there in the chapel. So anywhere where there's a safe space for people to gather. So in WADAs, churches provide a safe space for people to sit, for people to get help, people to get support, people to just sit in silence. And so a group is just, you know, not a group is just people sitting in a circle or not in a circle anywhere. And it's a very nonverbal group. It's very silent. It's like a meditation group in some senses. People aren't having to talk about their problems. They don't have to admit that they have an issue. They don't have to admit that they're, you know, have depression or that they're a drug addict or have had something bad happen to them. So, you know, the person is invited to come and sit down. The provider comes up and puts some needles in their ears. The person rests for about 40 minutes, sometimes longer, sometimes shorter.
Now, when people hear needles in the ears and they may not have ever had an acupuncture treatment, they get a little scared. But we're not talking about hypodermic needles, right?
Yeah, the needles that, you know, both community acupuncture and in NADA settings are hair thin. They're about 38 gauge, which is very, very flimsy and flexible. So, yeah, usually people don't feel anything at all. They just relax and take a nice nap, usually. That's the most common side effect of acupuncture, is that you just take a nap and wake up feeling refreshed after 45 minutes. So
there are no risks or dangers or side effects to getting this ear acupuncture?
No, the NADA protocol is particularly, you know, it's been shown to be safe for any group. There's no side effects that happen with the NADA protocol.
So let's talk about one of the great ironies about the NADA ear acupuncture protocol and community acupuncture in general, which is that given that a NADA acupuncturist only needs a very brief training relatively because it's so simple to deliver, it's very different than someone who gets like a 3 or 4 year traditional acupuncture training and license. And so ironically, a lot of the more traditional full body professional acupuncturists have been very opposed politically to the spread of the NADA protocol. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, first of all, NADA practitioners are not acupuncturists. And NADA as an organization, myself as a NADA trainer, you know, we don't train people to be acupuncturists.
In what sense? Because you're using acupuncture needles, so doesn't that make you acupuncturist?
It's actually a really good question. So, you know, acupuncture is a very broad field that entails a lot of different, theoretical underpinnings, and full-body acupuncture is different than the NADA protocol. Full body acupuncturists use lots of different types of points. NADA practitioners just use a few points. Just everybody gets the same treatment. There's no diagnosis that's necessary.
So the NADA practitioner is not going to say, well, what's going on in your life? Let me figure out which needle to give you at which point for this specific need. It's just a general, this is the treatment everybody gets is the same each time.
Yeah, it's an egalitarian treatment. It's actually really, really helpful that everybody gets the same treatment. There's no one special patient that gets this types of points. Another patient just gets a few points. But this type of therapy that uses acupuncture needles, you know, has been seen as a threat to full body acupuncturists, some of whom go to acupuncture school for 4 years and they come out of school with $150,000 in debt. Not a lot of jobs for them out there. A lot of times they charge up to $150 for a treatment. And so a lot of them have a hard time finding patients to come and afford their care on a regular basis. So now in our times, there's a lot of, you know, in the United States, there's a lot of insecurity, economic insecurity, and that does trickle down to the acupuncture field.
So have the professional full body 3-year, 4-year training acupuncturists actually tried to block the expansion of NADA around the country in different terms of legislation and state regulations and that kind of thing?
Yeah, there have been a lot of examples in the history of acupuncture in the U.S. where full-body acupuncturists actively oppose and oppose legislation for NADA so that health workers can offer the NADA protocol. You know, particularly in California, full-body acupuncturists have long opposed any sort of effort that NADA workers have and activists have brought forward to make this really helpful, simple, safe therapy accessible to more people.
Which is especially ironic because the medical doctors from mainstream medicine, they opposed acupuncture when it first started coming in to the United States. And now the acupuncturists are now opposing this more community-based approach.
Yeah, you know, the U.S. Healthcare landscape is a long history of turf wars. Medical doctors have, you know, also been threatened by any other healthcare practitioner that is doing medicine, and acupuncturists have long been, you know, engaged in turf wars with chiropractors, physical therapists, medical doctors, and as a result of that, I think the NADA AccuDetox workers often get seen as the enemy too. So some acupuncturists out there have this idea that AccuDetox workers offering free treatments for underserved groups are really taking away their clients.
Is there truth to that?
No, there's, you know, a lot of acupuncturists, first of all, don't really get much training at all in treating addictions. They don't get a lot of experience working within addiction settings. There's not a lot of jobs for them. The jobs that have existed are drying up for acupuncturists. And so, and a lot of full body acupuncture clinics aren't really equipped to treat a lot of mental health issues and a lot of addictions issues.
This is what we found when we started a clinic in Massachusetts with the Freedom Center that we ran for several years, offering free ear acupuncture treatments. Now, we had to use a licensed full-body 4-year training acupuncturist to run the clinic because of the regulations in Massachusetts, which was itself an obstacle. But what we found was that that acupuncturist was very happy to run the clinic because she would get all these new clients from the people that came in. People would come in for the first time. They would get a free treatment by donation. They would often never have acupuncture before. They would get interested in it. And now they start to go to her for additional treatments in her private clinic. And so she was able to drum up interest. So it seems to me that actually maybe by spreading community-based acupuncture, we could get more interest in traditional Chinese medicine in general than everyone could benefit from this. Because would you say that the obstacles created by this kind of political turf war have really restricted the availability of community acupuncture with the NADA protocol to underserved populations around the U.S.?
You're right on there. There's a lot of states where AccuDetox has been highly limited as a result of acupuncturists, full body acupuncturists, actions and their own political movements. Hawaii, California, South Carolina, a few of the states where full-body acupunctures have been the biggest obstacle to getting the NADA protocol accessible to people in need. So,
and then these people don't end up getting treatment, and it's not like they then go and pay for the full-body acupunctures. They just end up getting no treatment.
Exactly, yeah. There's really no shortage of patients out there needing care, and that's the thing. And so at Crossroads, with our clinic in Las Cruces, I'm a full-body acupuncturist, and you know, half of what I do is train people in the NADA protocol because I know it benefits the community. I know there's a lot of patients out there that wouldn't even make it into my $20 clinic. They wouldn't be able to afford it. They would never find us. They would never seek us out. So from my perspective as an acupuncturist, our clinic and our mission is that better served, and the community benefits from us training as many people as we can in acupuncture. I mean, that's really our mission, is to like not only provide low cost treatments, just to train as many people as possible. If we you know, if we had our way, we'd train everybody in acupuncture. So now regulations are a huge barrier to that. So, but I do want to come back to something you said about, you know, about the at what your experience at Freedom Center. You had a very supportive acupuncturist, you know, who really, really liked you all doing the NADA protocol. She benefited. She was, you know, also really wanted to help your clients. I would say there's a lot of acupuncturists out there. In my experience, a lot of people involved in NADA are full-body acupuncturists. I'm a full-body acupuncturist. So in California, a lot of acupuncturists have lost their work and their positions in providing NADA protocol due to funding cuts. So these same acupuncturists have tried to develop legislation to change the law so they can start training counselors in these programs how to do the treatments themselves. There is a lot of ignorance within the acupuncture profession about what is NADA and how that would benefit.
One of the biggest things that you hear is that, okay, it's risky. If people only have like a 10-day training and certification, that they're going to be hurting people. Is there any truth to that?
No evidence at all. So, you know, in the state of New Mexico, there have actually been more complaints against full-body acupuncturists than against people that are just doing the NADA protocol. So full-body acupuncture is much more dangerous and risky health therapy to offer to people. So very strict boundaries in which NADA providers work. They have a very limited scope of practice. And there's no evidence at all that NADA practitioners are a threat to the public.
Let's talk about the hope and promise of this vision of community healthcare, because you really started to develop a program in Juarez and now in the Sierra with the indigenous communities here that has an incredible set of implications for what kinds of things it could open up.
So in 2010, I was invited to come and give some NADA treatments by a group of women that were meeting regularly to do yoga and Tai Chi in their church. They wanted to try out what acupuncture feels like.
In Juarez?
In Juarez, in this church in the north part of Juarez. And so I came in and gave them some treatments. They were really interested in me coming back. And so we started a conversation about how they could have access to this type of treatment on a regular basis. Now, it clearly wouldn't be sustainable for me to keep coming in on a regular basis every week and every day to give them treatments. You know, I don't know their community. That wouldn't work out. So what we started a conversation with the larger church community in the Catholic Diocese in Juarez about how we could make this treatment more accessible to everybody in Juarez, particularly within the churches. And so,
why was the diocese interested?
Well, they were, at that time, 2010 was the most violent year to date in Juarez. It was Juarez was marred as the murder capital of the world, and the churches were looking to implement types of activities that to help respond to the violence, to empower their community health workers with new techniques to respond to the violence. And so we were invited by the Catholic Diocese to train their health workers in the NADA protocol so they could meet the needs of people who are suffering from the effects of violence, or people who had lost a loved one, and or people who are struggling with depression, anxiety, grief, or what they call duelo.
So tell us about the programs that are happening now in Juarez.
Well, we've trained over 80 health workers in Juarez, and now here in the Tarahumara, we've trained 12 more in the NADA protocol. And now they're able to provide this treatment on a regular basis in a very cost-effective way. They've established their own community-supported health centers within their churches. They're able to offer the NADA protocol whenever somebody needs it. They also offer regular groups on an ongoing basis. And we've gone on to teach some of our students other points so they can start to learn other protocols that can be very effective for trauma and for lots of different types of community health needs.
So why would indigenous communities in Mexico be interested in a Chinese indigenous traditional medicine?
Well, we know that acupuncture can be easily taught to health workers with different skill sets. The barefoot doctor movement in China taught people working, farmers basically, how to do basic acupuncture techniques. In the 1990s, a program started in response to the Civil War in 1994 called GUAMAP, the Guatemalan Acupuncture and Medical Aid Project. And they were invited by the Mayan health workers there, working with the indigenous groups, to teach them acupuncture points. And so they developed a training program out of that, which is about a 270-hour training program, including training them in the NADA protocol. And then these Mayan health workers were able to go and offer this treatment throughout the jungles and the areas that where there's no doctors or other types of medicine accessible. So when, you know, I learned about this project when I was going to acupuncture school, and I was very interested in learning how to do that type of training model. So Sister Maria Rosario, one of our students, she has an ongoing relationship with the indigenous groups and the Catholic diocese here in the Tatamata. And she has long been wanting to come and do a training down here and to teach them the NADA protocol. So our training here taught a group of mestizos and a group of indigenous health workers. And a lot of them have herbal training and other types of healthcare training. The NADA protocol is just another skill set they have that they can work with and offer these, you know, free groups that anybody can come and get a treatment at.
And what inspired you personally to become an acupuncturist and then to do this community service and community development work? How did you get connected to all this?
I was working in Portland as an addictions counselor at Hooper Detox, where they offer ear acupuncture, the NADA protocol, on a regular basis. So, and a lot of clients told me that the NADA protocol was one of the most effective, one of the most important parts of their recovery. So that was kind of my introduction. In addition, when I was in addictions counseling school, I was able to get the NADA protocol regularly as part of this addictions and HIV group back in New York City. I learned the NADA protocol in the Lincoln Recovery Center in South Bronx. So learning the NADA protocol was my interest in becoming a full-body acupuncturist. And that's been the same, you know, our students in WADAs, they first learned the NADA protocol, and then they wanted to learn other points. So NADA protocol can be a great introduction for anybody interested in learning full-body acupuncture. When I was living in Portland, you know, I had my own struggles with, you know, stress and pain issues. And I found this clinic, Alberta Street Acupuncture, where they offered sliding scale treatments. Carrie Klein, the acupuncturist there, you know, and she worked at Hooper Detox. And she was really into NADA and making acupuncture affordable to people. So found her clinic. Without her clinic, I wouldn't have been able to afford acupuncture. So for me, getting acupuncture, getting so much help from her, I knew that was how I wanted to practice too.
And in your work, have you found people are able to reduce and come off their use of psychiatric medications with the assistance of acupuncture treatments?
At our clinic, our community acupuncture clinic in Las Cruces, we have a lot of testimonies from patients who have completely gone off several different meds that they've been on at the same time by coming to our clinic. So we've helped people get off of psychotropics, benzodiazepines, alcohol, heroin, SSRIs, as well as pain meds.
So Ryan, if people want to find out more about your work and Crossroads Acupuncture and the work going on in Juarez and the Sierra in Mexico, how could they find out and get in touch with you?
You just go to crossroadsacupuncture.com. So, yeah, and we're also on Facebook.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Madness Radio, Ryan Bemis.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. So, and thanks for coming down to the Sierra Tarahumara with us. So.
Ryan Bemis is an acupuncturist based in Las Cruces, New Mexico. He's the director of Crossroads Community Acupuncture. And he also works as an acupuncturist in William Beaumont Army Medical Center at Fort Bliss in El Paso, Texas. You've been listening to Madness Radio, Voices and Visions from Outside Mental Health. Madness Radio is sponsored by the Icarus Project and Portland Hearing Voices. Host is Will Hall and producer is Nina Packabush. Madness Radio can be heard on KBOO-FM and the Pacifica Network, and shows are archived online at madnessradio.net.